Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blankers, I went outside today and there's this little, what would you call it, a door hanger for my water company? Like the local mud district or whatever?
Yep.
They're like, you owe us money, you're about to be delinquent, we're going to shut your water off tomorrow at noon.
Wait a minute.
I've always done auto pay since I moved in there, which is probably like 3-4 years.
They put it on your door?
They put it on my door. They put it on my door. So I've done auto pay with my mud district for the last 3 or 4 years, right? Since I moved in, I've done auto pay. Never has been an issue. Okay. I also enroll out of the whole mail thing. Like, you can do the paperless stuff.
I always
do that because I'm not going to read the mail anyway, so why get it in the mail? It's just taking up space. So they leave this on my door today. And they say, yeah, we're going to shut off your water. You haven't paid. So I call them. I'm like, oh, yeah, we got a new service that we didn't tell you about. So the new service, you got to re-register. You got to do all of this stuff. I was like, oh, cool. Thanks for the heads up. I'm glad that you put this door hanger on my door so I could call you and get it all straightened out, figured out. I look at the invoice when I got to work today to go pay it and set it all up. They charged me $35 to hang this door hanger on my door.
Oh, I'm fighting that one.
$35? You kidding me?
I'm fighting that one.
Oh, I'm going to call them on the way home. I'm going to channel my inner blankers over here and give them a call. Be like, you, $35? I auto pay all the time. You don't send me mail because I opted out of that, which saves you money. And you're charging me $35 to leave a door hanger
that's
on my
ridiculous.
Door.
Ridiculous.
Whenever
I mean, you talk about service
services.
Charges. Yeah. And that's the other thing. Like, I understand to a certain degree, an email or something with a red alert on it that says, hey, final warning, final notice. But I thought when you were saying that you got a door hanger, normally those people that go door to door going, have you changed your water service or are you looking for a new company to do this or that? That's one thing. But if you're paying some schmomo to walk your neighborhood and hang a door hanger because you changed services or he hasn't paid his bill, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm gonna let them have a piece of my mind. I'm gonna give them my 2 cents.
I don't know how much you can give up.
$35 for a door hanger.
That's a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
I had the girls at softball practice last night, and it was extremely hot, and they both blew through their water.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'll go get you some more. And
$5.
Yeah, not only $5 for 2 bottles of water, but it was a machine, right?
Yeah.
So I do the whole, tap my chip on my credit card, and I'll get 2 bottles of water. And it clearly states, hey, make your choice. Then it says, hey, pay. So I tap the card. So it says vending. And it says vending. And then all these lights go on. And then no bottle of water comes down. And I'm like, okay, well, there's more than one button. I'll be naive enough to try again. So I try another one. It does the same thing. No. And then I see a lady walking by. I go, ma'am, do you work here?
Yeah.
She goes, yeah. I go, so this is what she goes. Yeah, that's not mine. It's the city's. Call them. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not fun. He said,
I called.
Oh, really? That's not surprising.
I did. I'm like, you know what? You're not getting away with this.
Did they mail you some water?
They are waiting for it to show up on their account in the credit card file, and then they will send me a refund.
There you go. Attaboy. E said that Dick Willie works for the water company. That's the least surprising thing I've read all day. Murph Dog says,
I don't know who that is.
Murph Dog says most NFL teams that are good for a period have built a good core, then draft a good quarterback and win during his rookie contract. Selling Lamar Jackson to the Texans team is the opposite of that strategy. Look, there's a lot to kind of peel back there, Murph Dog. I wouldn't say that every team has been great and then drafted a quarterback and has come in and is automatically really, really good. But then also they were able to, like, Aaron Rodgers still isn't on his rookie deal. Tom Brady's not on his rookie deal. Won a Super Bowl in Tampa Bay his first year there. Pat Mahomes is no longer on his rookie deal.
But he won one on his rookie deal.
Who's that?
Mahomes.
Sure, yeah. Like, it's helpful whenever you have a quarterback that hits that quickly. But you don't need a rookie quarterback on their rookie or a quarterback on their rookie deal to win a Super Bowl. Does it give you more money to spend to build a better team around it? Yes, it absolutely does. But it isn't like a prerequisite that you need it to win a Super Bowl. Now, what you said about Lamar Jackson, yes, the Texans have way too many holes to go out and like make a trade for Lamar Jackson where you're giving up three first-rounders and then paying him all this money. That would do the Texans no good. That's why you need that quarterback on a rookie deal, keep all your draft capital, keep all of your money as well. That way you can go spend. So, like, I wouldn't advocate for Lamar Jackson. Like, yeah, he's a really good quarterback. Yeah, he makes you better. But in terms of being like long-term, really good Super Bowl-type contention, I think you have to find that quarterback in the draft while also building up the team with the rest of your capital and money.
Here's the easiest response to that is the statistic that since the quarterback contracts have been so dominant and gotten to the level they've gotten, that there hasn't been a quarterback that is the number one paid player in the $40 million to $35 to $40 million a year range that's gotten back to another Super Bowl and won it because of the fact that it's so hyper-dominant and so debilitating to the rest of your roster. So, therefore, you know, if you get a Lamar Jackson, it's putting the cart in front of the horse, the analogy I always use, because now you've got the most important position on the field, but you've got him at such a high level that it's almost virtually impossible to get the return on the investment in the other position groups necessary on either side of the ball, let alone on both sides of the ball, to try and be an effectively dominant team in the league.
Yeah. No, I think that that stuff is true. That's why, like, I'm okay, though, giving a quarterback that you draft a second contract. Like, that's a no-brainer. Like, do you want to be the team that trades for Deshaun Watson, three first-rounders, $230 million, largest guaranteed? Do you want to be the team like Denver that trades two first, three players, then gives Russell Wilson all that money? I don't want to be that team. I want to give the quarterback their second contract, like Kansas City, like Green Bay forever, like Tom Brady forever. Now, if you can convince them to take less than top quarterback dollar, well, then that's how you really win in the NFL. You were talking about earlier how you watched C.J. Stroud against Wisconsin, your team, this past Saturday. 713-780-ESPN, by the way. I went back and watched most of that game. Now, I only watched Ohio State on offense because I had zero interest in watching your Badgers on offense.
As well, you made the right move.
Yeah, I was fast-forwarding through their offensive drives, which didn't take that long to fast-forward.
Have you ever
seen
a four-and-a-half, five-star quarterback coming out of high school look worse on the major Division I college level?
I've seen a few.
Woo! Well, let me tell you something.
Are they playing a true freshman?
Graham Mertz is right up there. No! Graham Mertz came out as a 4.5 to 5-star quarterback. He was rumored to be the highest, the first 5-star quarterback and first 5-star player Wisconsin had had in, like, maybe their history, but in the last couple of decades.
Yeah.
And he has proceeded to crap the bed messily every single time. Over and over and over again. So much so that they took a guy that actually took them to a bowl game and won it and was really good and let him walk to Notre Dame so that they could give him even more confidence he's the starter so he could crap the bed even further and give you more fertilizer for your lawn.
Sounds like a Georgia
situation.
I'm not
bitter, don't worry.
JT Daniels and Stetson Bennett.
I wish the rest of the team was that good at Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, anyways, Ohio State whooped up on them. I went back and watched almost every possession that Ohio State had in this game. Because I wanted to take a look at C.J. Stroud. And look, C.J. Stroud is an impressive college quarterback. That offense is so efficient. It is hard, though, to evaluate who C.J. Stroud is because the offense is so efficient.
Marvin Harrison's kid. You got, yeah. I mean, weapons all over the place.
They have first-rounder after first-rounder after first-rounder at the wide receiver
position.
And that's
with Chris Olave going in the first round.
Yeah. And Garrett Wilson.
Yep.
They have two more first-rounders right behind them. And Stroud was throwing to those guys last year. But because they have wide receivers, like C.J. Stroud's taking, they're doing a lot of RPO stuff. He's taking a one or two step drop and then throwing to first round receivers who have tons of space in front of them, which is, it's hard to evaluate Stroud. And then on top of that, like this Urban Meyer, Day, Tom Herman offense is so efficient in the college game that it's really hard to get a good read of what the quarterback is. So you have, like, you have a good quarterback, a good talent. You have elite wide receivers. You have an offense that makes it easy on a quarterback to get the ball to those receivers. They rarely have it in their hand very long, so they're not creating or anything like that.
And their line is huge.
And their line is massive, so you have plenty of time to throw on top of all of that. If you go look at Justin Fields' numbers at Ohio State and you compare them to C.J. Stroud's numbers at Ohio State, Stroud, albeit, is a little bit better, but it's not night and day. It's not like Stroud's way up here and Fields is way down here. It's like Stroud's way up here and Fields is slightly below him way up here as well. Fields terrifies me evaluating Stroud. So it's not so much that I dislike C.J. Stroud. It's that I dislike every quarterback that came before C.J. Stroud in this type of offense.
I'll say it specifically to Justin Fields. I believe in Justin Fields coming out. I believe the toughness that you saw in the semifinal game when he was just beat to crap in the first half.
He was a great college quarterback.
And he just toughed it out. And he kept on throwing darts. And he kept on doing everything and anything necessary to lead his team. And then you saw his ability to run. And you saw that he had a strong arm. And you knew that he was athletic. And he's a bigger kid than you think when you see him on TV. And you say he's got the intangibles. He's got the measurables. He's got everything. I was a 100% believer. And then when I saw that he was taken by the Bears and that they moved up to get him, I thought, oh, God, they finally got it right. They might finally have the guy that can take them where they've been desperate to get to for the last two decades. But then when you look at it and you can say, well, it was the coach's fault. It was the general manager's fault. It was the system's fault. It was all those things. And I was like, okay, I'm even going to kind of hang on and believe that too, because I believe that they didn't give him the chance to use his legs. They didn't put him in the RPO situations like he had at Ohio State. They didn't give him quick throw options so that he doesn't have to, you know, get hammered or make, you know, decisions in his head with the clock ticking. Then I saw him this year, and I saw what I saw for the entire game against the Packers, and then I saw it for the entire game against the Texans, and I saw a guy that looks like he doesn't get it, he doesn't got it, and he ain't gonna get it.
It goes beyond just Fields, though. But, like, Fields is what, like, really hammers in the point. I think it really illustrates the point. And we also just watched Justin Fields, who looked great coming out of college, much like C.J. Stroud looks great coming out of college. But let's keep in mind that Ryan Day is running this Urban Meyer-style offense. He came from the Urban Meyer school, much like Tom Herman came from the Urban Meyer school. Look at all the quarterbacks that have played for Urban Meyer and Urban Meyer type of offenses over the course of their career. Braxton Miller, who looked great in college, but they turned him into a bad wide receiver in the NFL. Cardale Jones, JT Barrett, Dwayne Haskins, rest in peace.
Is the last one, yeah.
Alex Smith is the – Tim Tebow of Florida. Alex Smith is the best pro quarterback that Urban Meyer ever produced. Alex Smith was a good pro. Was he worth the first overall pick in an NFL draft? If you're drafting a quarterback at number one overall and they have the career of Alex Smith, would you be happy about that?
No.
There has never been an Urban Meyer quarterback or a quarterback from that offensive system that has been good in the NFL.
No. And
I mean, Smith has been good, but underachieving.
I mean, I think that's why we spent so much time saying there is a massive difference between the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL and 10 to 15. And you have to have comparable goals and aspirations if you're looking for 11 to 15 as opposed to 1 through 10. Because the 1 through 10s have a legit chance to win it all. And after that, you see the fall off in a quick hurry, and you see that the ramifications are drastic in terms of how high of a ceiling and how far they can go. And it's just the way it is. It's the reality of today's NFL with the offensive pass-happy systems, with all that's put on a quarterback's shoulders, that if you either have it or you don't. And sometimes it's the it factor or just that intangible of being able that no situation is too big of a moment, and your blood pressure doesn't go too fast, and we talk about the internal clock of Davis Mills going way faster than the game clock. The guys that have it, and this is why Brady in part has had the longevity he's had, because one of the things he has is something that you can't measure on with a stopwatch or on film. Mm-hmm. It's the ability to, like, take the moment and not make it too big. Internalize it to the point where you say, it's just another play,
yep,
and I'm going to make the right decision. And then it's going to be on my teammates to do their job as well as me doing mine to get us where we need to go. A lot of quarterbacks don't have the trust or the ability internally, yep, to do that.
See, my number one attribute for a quarterback is that you have to make good decisions. And Ohio State eliminates all of that from their quarterback. So it's not me anti-CJ Stroud. It's me, anti-Urban Meyer. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Is there any reason for optimism for the Rockets this season? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
So there's optimism if you think that you don't have energy anymore and there's nothing you can do about it. All you got to do is go to Apollo Men's Health. Men and women that have heard me talking about Apollo Men's Health that I see in the lobby on a weekly basis tell me, I heard you talking about it, so I had to check it out. Once I checked it out, I gave it a shot. And once I gave it a shot, I realized that there is an alternative to saying that I just don't have the energy anymore and there's nothing I can do about it. They have more energy on a daily basis. They feel better and are maximizing the day every single day, day in, day out, from their job to the gym, family and kiddo responsibilities. Your to-do list gets done, and you feel a heck of a lot better doing it if you go to Apollo Men's Health. They've been in business now over 5 years, and they are helping Houstonians on a daily basis. Two locations to better serve you, with more locations coming, with the first one scheduled for League City very soon. The fact is Dr. O doesn't want you to win an Olympic gold medal. He wants you to win the day, and he's got many ways he can do it. It starts with hormone therapy and or a B12 shot to get that energy back in your life. It could be recovering quicker like HGH peptide therapy because you're sore after the gym. You want to get on a workout program, start with a full body composition analysis, and let the process go from there. And you can measure your results from body fat loss to the fact that you are going to gain muscle. Check them out. Tell them I sent you by. Go to ApolloMH.com right now. Book an appointment. When you do, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. More importantly, you're going to find out these are people that care. So if you tell them the goals you're trying to achieve, they're going to put you on a plan that works. They're going to get you results. They're good people making results happen on a daily basis. Check out the people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rockets held their media day yesterday. Training camp in Lake Chuck. They're at McNeese. I'm sure they're staying at the Nugget.
I get the Nugget part of it, but from a facilities and choices there standpoint, I'm a little perplexed.
But if you're staying in Lake Chuck, what other options do you have?
I don't know. I don't know the area that well.
That's all you got. That's all you got. And I mean, unless you're playing golf.
Now, let me just tell you something. There is an option.
You can build your own. But
yeah, well, some teams, and they do this in Vegas, and especially during the bubble, they did this too. You just drop the court down in the ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
And you could drop multiple courts down when you open up the ballroom.
Sure. I'm not sure that's better than practicing at some college facilities.
I'm not sure that from the standpoint that means the most to the owner.
Probably not.
That it's not the best choice.
It's a little bit of a donation. No big deal. Anyways, training camp opening up here pretty soon. They held the media day yesterday. Is there reason for optimism for the Houston Rockets this season?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that there is. I think that fans should definitely be optimistic. And as we always say when we talk about, and I've always harped on the mirror images that have been for the last several years of the Texans and the Rockets, that the Rockets are further along than the Texans. Because as we sit here and continually, you know, hyper-analyze Davis Mills and the Texans, you know that you have guys that could be your franchise player on your roster. And you have Jalen Green. And now you've added Mr. Smith to the mix. And you've got other key role players that showed that they could play in on this level. And they could be contributors on an NBA team and maybe an NBA playoff team. So and the average age is of such that you look at it and say this team could be very good for a long time once they get good. And they're on the road to starting to try and do that. So I think there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic about this team. And there's plenty of reasons to be excited because though Jabari Smith isn't there yet, it's exciting to think what he could be and how soon he could get there and all the different skills he brings to the table. Can Jalen Green continue to make progress year in, year out to be a superstar caliber player? You know, you've got other guys that are going to be helpful additions to this team from the Ty Washingtons to, you know, Alperen Şengün and all of his great footwork at a young age and the things that he showed you early on. I think that you look, Eason's another guy that I don't think gets enough run as a guy that's going to be an above average player in this league.
Agreed.
So I think that the roster has a ton of young talent that makes you excited about Rockets basketball. You just have to be realistic. It's not going to be this year in terms of wins and losses.
To me, that's where I'm at. There's reason for optimism, but you have to kind of curtail your optimism. If you're thinking that the Rockets are going to finish in the top four in the Western Conference and have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs, I would say that you need to pump the brakes on your optimism. I believe that the Rockets and the Texans, you can draw a lot of similarities between the two of them on like where they're going with their organization. I believe both of the organizations have the arrow pointing up. Mm-hmm. I just believe the Rockets are probably two-ish years ahead of where the Houston Texans
completely
are.
Agree.
Now, I like...
Let me just add to that. The other thing you add on to that is we were talking about, hey, if the Texans truly get to the point where they're following the plan, next year's the first year you can start spending.
Mm-hmm.
From the Rockets' perspective, not only you've already been in a position where you could spend a little bit, but when John Wall comes off the books, you can go nuts because these guys are all under rookie contracts for the most part. You get John Wall off the books and maybe even trade Eric Gordon at some point during the season before the trade deadline. you could absolutely go whichever direction and however amount of money you want to go to free agency wise.
There's some questions with this team. Like, I'm bullish on the future of Jabari Smith, obviously. I'm bullish on the future of Jalen Green. Now, you have to have, like, to be a champion, all of the things that you're optimistic about have to come to fruition. Like, Jabari needs to hit. Jalen needs to hit. Kevin Porter Jr., if he doesn't hit, you probably need to find a true point guard going forward. And I'm talking about 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. I'm not talking about right now. I've seen some people think that Ty Washington's going to be the third-string point guard behind Knicks. So, like, I don't know what to expect from Ty Washington.
Better not happen, and it better not. And if it did, it would only be for the first year. Because I know they love Deshaun Knicks, and I don't know why. But Ty Washington has a guy that has a ton of ability.
I'm not as high on Knicks as you are.
I don't believe in Deshaun Knicks.
I'm in Ty. Okay. I really don't like Knicks either. Ty is like an intriguing prospect. I'm totally fine with the pick. I think it's boom or bust pick, and if it's boom, that's outstanding. And when you're drafting late in the first
round,
where
you pick them, it's an ideal
spot.
Exactly.
So I'm not knocking the pick at all. I like the pick of Ty Washington. I'm just not ready to put him into my he's part of the future plans conversation. Now, if you get that out of him, that's obviously outstanding. I'm bullish about Jalen and Jabari. I want to see Kevin Porter Jr. another year at this point guard spot to see if I'm wrong. I don't think he's a point guard long term, and he's entering the final year of his deal as well. So it's a make or break year for Kevin Porter Jr., kind of similar to it's a make or break year for Davis Mills. I want to see a full season of Alpi getting some full minutes, full starter minutes. And then Eason, I'm bullish on Eason. I love Tari really Eason. Good. I loved him in college. I loved what I saw in the summer league. I think he is the perfect player on a playoff team. Even if he's coming off the bench, that's fine with me, and he likes coming off the bench. He was the sixth man of the year in the SEC. And one of the best players in the SEC. So I like where the Rockets are going. But I'm going to go into the season saying, show me the growth of these young players. I want to see what Jabari looks like the night after a bad night. I want to see if Jalen Green can be the dude we saw the last month of the season for the entire 82 games. I want to see if I'm wrong about Kevin Porter Jr. being a point guard in the NBA because I just don't see it. All that said, though, I think the Rockets can get to 35 wins. I think they can go 35-47.
West is tough, man.
The West is tough, sure, but 35 wins last year would have been the 10th spot in the Western Conference during the play-in. I think 35 is like the top-end range of optimism, the top end of where the Rockets can be. But if the Rockets go out and win 35 games this year, I might be slightly surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked.
I think there's enough talent that you – and again, I have a little bit more confidence in Ty than you do.
He hits.
Whether he's a one or a two. Look, the one that I have serious doubts about in the last two drafts is Garuba. But if you miss on Garuba, but you hit for the majority of everybody else, and that doesn't mean you hit because they became a superstar. If they just become a rotational player in the NBA, you hit. Based on the entire draft being based on potential these days, you hit on those guys. You like this roster. You see the potential for multiple players to possibly be franchise-type players. You're doing fantastic as a franchise. But as it relates to playing in a loaded Western Conference, in a loaded league these days, I don't think that you should pull the Nick Caserio speech out if you're Rosetta Stone, and you should basically tell the world, we're not basing this season on wins and losses.
Yep.
We're basing the season on the progress of the teams we have. Because you hit on the one guy that I didn't touch on, but you know I've touched on this multiple times. This is such a make-or-break season, not for the organization, not for the roster, for one guy. It's Kevin Porter Jr.
Yeah.
And it's not about Kevin Porter Jr.'s ability to play basketball. He has tons of basketball ability. I'm completely in agreement with you. We've had these discussions in the past. I don't believe he's a point guard, but I believe he's an NBA basketball player. And I believe he's a two. He can play multiple positions on the floor. He can be everything that you need him to be. I don't think he's a true point guard, but he can distribute from time to time. But he can score, he can shoot, he can do things. But Kevin Porter Jr. as an adult, Kevin Porter Jr. as a mature NBA basketball player has got a ton that he has to show you in 1 year's time because the clock is ticking. And basically, what the Rockets have done to this point, I don't want to say it stunted his growth as a professional, but has definitely covered up everything to this point. But now the Rockets have to be real. It's a make-or-break season for Kevin Porter Jr., and it's a make-or-break season as it relates to the Houston Rockets because you've got a tough decision to make. His money's coming up. And it's not about his ability to play basketball. It's about his ability to manage himself as a professional in the NBA.
Kelly Iko said that they were trying to get a deal done with him before the start of camp. I think that they were trying to get him at a discount, probably a maturity discount, kind of like the Lance McCullers injury discount that Lance McCullers gave you. I think that Kevin Porter Jr. is probably betting on himself a little bit because he felt like he's a better player than the contract that he was offered. I don't know this on authority, just the feeling that I get reading things. I think Kevin Porter Jr. is betting on himself. So if he doesn't figure it out this season where millions of dollars are on the line, he'll never figure it out.
There's also a reason why they got him for basically nothing when they got him from the Cavs.
Waivers, right?
Well, no, they traded a second-round pick, but with enough intangibles in the pick that you basically were never going to have to give up
Cleveland,
that pick.
Cleveland leaked that they were going
to
waive him.
They had to get rid of him because he had too many outbursts off the floor. Now, we know of the ones that have been made public already, but we know Kevin Porter Jr., the professional, has got a lot of work to do as it relates to the coaching staff, handling his business, doing the things he needs to do off the floor as it relates to then not letting it affect how he plays on the floor. But you're right. He's taking a multi-million dollar risk on himself, turning that money down. And no matter what the Rockets offered you, you have to ask yourself and ask your agent, could I have gotten that money from anybody else? Has the word gotten around? Because so far to this point around the league, it's trickled down a little bit, but really there's not a whole lot that the league has to go by. So they're going to find out what's going on this year too.
Yeah.
And they're going to dig a little deeper. It could affect him multi-million dollarly in his pocketbook, and that's a big deal. It could affect the Rockets to a more stronger degree if they would have made that deal, got it done for multiple years, and then found out they couldn't hide it anymore and they couldn't contain it.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN is the reason for optimism for the Houston Rockets entering this season. 713-780-3776. Reason for optimism for the Astros. Is it too early to be making Astro playoff rotation plans? Killer Beast, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good people at MyBookie yet again, because to me, there's only one place to bet if you're going to bet on sports. It's MyBookie.ag. They take care of their customers every step of the way. They're going to take care of you in the fact that they're always going to make sure you can pay however you want to pay. You want to pay with Bitcoin, you want to pay with a check, you want to pay with a credit card, they'll work with you. You want to get paid when you win, they're going to make sure that happens. They're not going to hem and haw and try and hang on to your money. But the one thing that I really like more than any other sites that I've seen, and then some, is they try and take care of their customers in a multitude of ways. A lot of times they do promotional picks where it doesn't cost you to get in, but if you win, you're going to get the money in your account. The most important way that they take care of you is they're going to do this double your next deposit up to $1,000 deal yet again. They do it all the time. They do it better than anybody else. They're going to do it as long as you use the promo code BET975. Up to $1,000, you log into your account or you create one, and you put in that promo code BET975. If you put $200 in, almost instantaneously, you got $400 in your account. More money in your account means more games you can bet on and more times that you can actually win in the process. They also do it so that you don't have to always just worry about point spreads and over-unders and things like that. The Prop Builder is an unbelievable concept that they have where you design the bet, pick a team or pick a player, pick a stat, then make a bet surrounding it. MyBookie's Prop Builder allows you another alternative to putting money on games and making them more interesting. It's winning season, people, and the reason is because you go to MyBookie.ag and put in that promo code BET975, and you are a winner because you get double your next deposit in your account. Then do what I always tell you to do. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere. At the only site I tell you to do it, it's MyBookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees with no Brendan Riley today. I don't know how we're getting along, considering he's our puppeteer. I have no idea.
Get along. It's
I don't know how we're doing the show.
The show is moving forward, I don't know.
That was Sean who said that, right? Wasn't it Sean who said that?
No, it was Andrew.
Oh, even right, Sean knows it was Andrew.
That's how irrelevant it was to me and who said it. Yeah. No offense, Sean.
Oh, no, not to you, Sean. Definitely to Andrew.
Yeah, all the offense that I am spewing out of my mouth goes to Andrew Carlson, who is in the building.
Yeah,
he is in the building.
Hmm.
Andrew Carlson is. Keith from L.A. asked us, are you guys embracing the suck for the Rockets also? Sort of. Yeah,
kind of. But with more optimism.
Yeah.
Like, I believe in Caserio's plan right now and his ability to evaluate talent, but the most important position on the field has yet to be determined, and that is quarterback. I believe in the Rockets, as I just said, and I believe that they have the potential to have a couple guys that could be as important as an NFL quarterback, a franchise-type player to build around with Green, with Smith, with some of the guys they already have that they've drafted. So I'm really excited to see not only do they have those type players, but they have other rotational players that could be very impactful. So it's going to be fun to watch. They get up and down the floor. They play a style of basketball that is fun to watch. It's just, can they play it at a level where they're making progress towards getting to their ultimate team goals?
I don't know how fun it is to watch. They need to, for me, they
you know,
need
as
to...
I said that, I thought when they're playing fast break basketball and they're scoring off of it, it is fun, but it does get to be isolation a lot.
Yeah, they're not a whole lot of offensive creativity for offensive coach, right? And then defensively, they couldn't guard their shadow a year ago. So I'm hoping that things change this year in regards to that, because there were a lot of games last year. I'm like, how am I sitting through this? This is preseason basketball. This is NBA All-Star Game basketball. So
somebody asked me this question more the other day. I'm curious what you think. If, because we've analyzed it in the past too, as it relates to Steven Silas, he doesn't call a lot of plays. He doesn't get into a lot of structure. And there's a lot of people that have said in order for this team to take it to the next level and the true development of some of these players, they might need a different coach.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't work out for him this year, would you consider Ime Udoka?
Why not? I mean, he's still employed, but why not?
First of all, I don't think he's going to be employed that much longer by the Celtics. We'll see.
Probably not, but he still is.
But I think that in terms of if we're just talking strictly basketball coaching.
Sure.
I'm with you. I think Ime Udoka.
Now hide the women and children. Well, but yeah, I would take him as the head coach for the Rockets.
I think that you're looking for that kind of guy that has been in a system like a Greg Popovich pedigree, coming off the Popovich tree.
Uh-huh.
But I think he also understands, and he's worked with a Jason Tatum and a Jaylen Brown and young talented players to where he could orchestrate a system.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the best of both worlds. When you have to call plays, or you get, you know, the other reason I really like him is because he makes his team play defense.
I hope that's the reason you like him.
Okay, easy. I'm just saying,
don't bring your wives to work. Just saying. Make sure that they're not in the front office. Make sure they're not around the team.
That was easy, but that's on you.
If you want to win the games, it's fine, but just, you know, if you don't want to lose your wife, make sure you keep her at home.
Wow.
That's all I'm saying.
I like this. Is a strong Branham take.
Is it well? I mean, it's just what it is. 713-780-ESPN. Is it too early to be making Astro playoff rotation plans? We've been guilty of this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's too early? Or do you think it's fine? You think it's okay?
We've been guilty of this. Look, I said 3 weeks ago, I was asking the question, is there key to your third best starter?
We flipped a lot.
Yeah, and we flipped around, but we've had reason to flip because of the fact that we've seen a lot of fluctuation in the starting pitchers. So I look at it, and the question has, you know, really, and I heard some of the other shows talking about this, is not only where do you put Christian Javier, but how high in your rotation would you put Christian Javier?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the one thing that I disagree with is people saying, look, if you're better on the road than you are at home, then you move guys around, and saying you could see moving Fromber.
Well, Lance was saying that about McCullers.
That's what I'm saying.
This morning.
Yeah, McCullers is one of them, and then the consideration of moving Fromber, and would Fromber be okay with it, and thinking Fromber would be okay with it. I'm not okay with that. I just think that overall, your two best pitchers have to be the top two pitchers in your rotation. I think Justin and Fromber are sharpied in, and those guys, home or road, doesn't matter. Those are my top two. Now, where it's up for discussion would be 3 and 4 and McCullers and Christian Javier.
Yeah. I understand where Lance is coming from with the home road splits, which mm-hmm. they still are pretty big. I looked it up this morning when he was talking about it. His home numbers career are much better than his road numbers, pretty significantly. 2000 last year was kind of flipped, where he's actually slightly better at the road than he was at home.
It was the difference of 2 years.
Career wise, it's night and day.
Career wise, fine, but yeah. Recently he's had a year where he was better at home, followed by a year where he was much better on the road.
This year, like 7 starts on the entire season, he's only had 1 bad start. It really came in Atlanta, so it's hard to tell this season and like throw that into the equation. My biggest thing though, with like the Astros playoff rotation, is don't overthink it. Don't get cute. Like you see a lot of times managers, and they get into the postseason, they start micromanaging. They start trying to outthink the room. Tampa Bay is guilty of it a few years ago with Blake Snell, where he's just cruising, but he can't go through the lineup more than 3 times, or it might have even been 2. I don't remember. And then they pull him. Like, don't get cute with who you are, what you've done all season long. The Astros at least have 3 starting pitchers. I would say like 6 starting pitchers that you trust. But there's no doubt in my mind that Justin Verlander is going to be in the playoff rotation. There's no doubt Fromber will be. There's no doubt that Lance McCullers will be. If I'm making the decisions, there's no doubt that Christian Javier is. Now, some people are like, well, he's a Swiss Army knife. He needs to be in the bullpen. That's a role that he's really great at. I don't care. Give me four really good starting pitchers, and as we said yesterday, line them up, let the world know about it, and just dare your opponent to come take it, because that is the best four-man rotation in all of baseball currently.
Yeah.
Now, you could also do the Swiss Army knife with Christian Javier by still being your game four starter.
So you brought this up pre-show, yeah. And it's a great point. Go with it, because I don't think enough people have thought about this.
The way the ALDS is set up, there's an off day after game one. There's an off day after game two. There used to only be one off day between game two and game three. So you have an extra off day now. So you could pitch in game one and really start game four. It'd be 4 days rest. It'd be a normal start day for whoever's pitching in that game. You could say that Justin Verlander is going to be your game four starter because he would pitch game one. He would have 4 days rest, normal rest, pitch on the fifth day, game four. I don't want to do that with Justin Verlander unless you're down like 2-1. That's the only thing. That's the only way I would even entertain it. If you're up 2-1, you go Christian Javier in that game. You're saving Verlander for game five if you lose it. If you win it, he's ready to go ALCS game one. So you could use Christian Javier as your Swiss Army knife and still your game four starter. He's available in relief in game one if you need him. If you use him, great. Hope you win. If you don't, that's great too. You're not taxing his arm. But then on top of that, you're also starting him in game four no matter what. So your game four starter might be more valuable than your game three starter because your game four starter can pitch in game one.
Yeah, I think that people really have to consider those off days because it's so quirky and so different than it's been in the past with that extra day off. And maybe it's almost, and I hate to say this because it'll fire a lot of people up and get them to think about it and get into it, but it's almost like counterproductive to the Astros, who have such a surplus of great starting pitching. It's like for the teams that don't have as much in terms of starting pitching, it's an advantage for them because the way it's set up in that round, they can get the most out of their starting pitching without having the depth of an Astros team or some of the teams that have 3, 4, 5, you know, 3 and 4 starting pitchers because you can bring your ace back quicker. But as it relates to the Astros, I don't do it because you just don't know what you don't know about Justin Verlander's arm internally. You know what Justin Verlander is. You know what he's been all year. But you don't want to push it because there's been a multitude of times where he's had 6 days off. Then he really wanted to get back to 5 days off. But ideally, you don't want to overtax him, especially early in the playoffs, because we know the other thing about Justin Verlander is he hasn't been his best at all times in the World Series. So you don't want to push him back too soon.
Now, if you're down 2-1, though, I think you can
reconsider
that.
But I think that's the other thing I was going to get to. When you're the organization, whether it be Click and or Dusty or a combination, you have the ability to be flexible based on where you are in a series. If you're up big in a series, then there's no need to push JV back. But you also know that if you're down in a series and you realize that other guys just didn't show up the way you wanted them to wherever you used them, then you might be apt to think, I'm going to think about at least the possibility of putting JV out there because I can't afford to lose, go down 3-1 or do things.
Well, you go down 3-1, you're done.
You're done, yeah, I was going to say.
The interesting part of this, though, is the wild card series. So, like, those teams are going to have to use their ace.
They're going to come in kind of gassed a little bit.
They're going to be a little taxed.
Yeah.
They're going to be a little taxed. It's the advantage of finishing in the top two. Now, if you finish top two, you're going 5 days without playing the game, which also has, you know, a certain set
and if you heard Click on the telecast the other day, he said they're already figuring out a schedule to where they're going to go inter squads. I think they'll do whatever they have to do, even with like Space Cowboys guys and otherwise, depending on where they are in their season, that they will do simulated games so that, as he said, you know, it's as much about not just the pitching, which is important, but from a hitting perspective, seeing live major league pitching so that they don't come in rusty having seen nothing but, you know, batting practice pitchers and pitching machines.
Oh yeah, they'll be doing some live games, live BPs, all of that. 713-780 ESPN 713-780-3776. What are some overreactions after 3 weeks in the NFL? Are we buying those overreactions? Are we selling those overreactions? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You know what I'm not overreacting to? And that is the greatness that is Gentle Ben. I like a good drink at the end of the day. I like a good drink at night. Vodka, gin, bourbon, all part of the rotation for me. And Gentle Ben Spirits does it better than anyone else. Gentle Ben's a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits. They use their state-of-the-art, innovative, Presedo craft technology that's better in purity, it's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Bend. Compare it to your brand. You're going to taste the huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Bend Spirits, A&M Class of 85, by the way, had me out to that tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought. And ever since then, I've been a Gentle Bend man. It is so smooth, so clean, eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find the Gentle Bend Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs, also online at gentlebend.com. If you're looking for the bourbon, you have to head to the tasting room in Alvin to try that bourbon. It's exclusive to the tasting room, and it's fantastic. 94 proof, winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year. Head to the tasting room in Alvin and give it a shot. You're going to love it. Sit back with good company and raise a glass of the very best Gentle Bend.
ESPN 97.5. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Lance McCullers scratched tonight, by the way. We were just talking about Astros, pitchers, rotation, playoffs, et cetera, et cetera. He's not pitching tonight at Minute Maid Park. He's sick. He's fallen ill. We wish Lance McCullers the very best.
Yeah, I mean, that worried me because it happened during the show and I wasn't aware of it and I didn't see it on Twitter. And so when you brought it up, I thought, well, good Lord, I hope it's not health related in terms of his arm.
Yeah.
But you just don't, you know, at this point is health related. Even being sick, you don't want that.
The Astros saying he's ill could mean he has like a little bit of a cough, or it could mean that he needs a second Tommy John.
Let me ask you a question, Jeremy.
Who knows?
The key here, and I don't know if you saw a release or not, but was there ever any discomfort?
I didn't see any discomfort. Because
you can be sick without having discomfort. But if you're the Astros sending out a press relief and there's discomfort, there is more than enough there to have reason to be concerned.
Yeah. I mean, there's a little concern. Luis Garcia will start in his stead as the Astros open up a two-game series against the Snakes.
Oh, Sean, by the end of the show, you better play a song or you're going to be in trouble.
Can you name that song?
As
much as I love that song, it was the first song we gave.
Wait. My memory is terrible today. Hang on.
Yeah, that's what it is.
No, because I know that it is Selena.
It is Selena's.
And it is...
Do anything for Selena's.
Cumbia.
Close. Baila esta cumbia. But I'll give you credit for that. That's okay. Well done. Good pull. That's a good pull. I'll give you credit for that. Week 3 overreactions around the NFL. 713-780-ESPN if you think the Killer Bees are morons and idiots and you disagree with us. Jaguars are the best team in the AFC South. They're in first place.
Yeah, look. I mean, you brought what? When was it?
Banging this drum.
Was it last week you started this nonsense?
No. Well, I did make a Jags bet to win the AFC South before the division.
But last week you brought it up.
It was more odds related.
Yeah, the chances of all the teams in the division, which had the best.
I liked the number more than I actually believed that the Jags would win this division. 3 weeks in, though, I don't think it's an overreaction. Doug Peterson's a ball coach, man. You go from Urban Meyer to Doug Peterson, that's a huge jump. They had the number one pick in the draft. They spent a lot of money this offseason. Look, people thought that the money they spent was reckless and foolish and they overpaid, and maybe they did, but even when you do that, you're bringing in good players.
Even Kirk. Like, I didn't think Kirk was going to be as good as he's been so far this season.
And you could sell to me that they overspent on Kirk. Okay, great. But Christian Kirk is a huge upgrade over what they had.
Look, and you're right on Peterson, because as much as part of the credit or maybe too much credit went Nick Foles' way after the way they were able to get everything done all the way to the Super Bowl title without their starting quarterback in Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson knows his stuff. And Doug Peterson paid his dues in Green Bay along the way and got an opportunity that he maximized. And it's much like when we have the discussions, did Lovey get fired too soon in Chicago? He's the last coach with the Bears to win 10 games. But Doug Peterson, for whatever reason, didn't get to see it through any further in Philadelphia. But bonus for Jacksonville for getting it right the second time, much like Nick Caserio. He swung and missed on Culley, but he had a guy fall into his lap. We don't know if he got it right or not. But, you know, as much as Jacksonville swung and missed on Urban Meyer, their follow-up was right spot on. And this is why when we were talking about this the other day as it relates to, you know, are you going to have the right offensive coordinator and maybe head coach when you get that franchise quarterback if you take one in the draft? It's hyper important in the first 2 years that you get the right guy, because you don't want Sam Darnold having to go through how many coordinators and coaches. You don't want all these quarterbacks that we continue to scrutinize, like Matt Nagy and what he did or didn't do to Justin Fields. You want to make sure at the right time you get the right coach and OC if you have the right quarterback. Jacksonville got it right with the guy that they got right now, or so it looks three games in.
Overreaction or reality? They're the best team in the AFC South.
Overreaction.
I think it's a reality. I was looking at some of the numbers on Trevor Lawrence, and look, going into the year, I was bullish on Trevor Lawrence. After one game, I was like, man, did I push this too hard? And in the last two games, he's kind of flipped the switch. Has been really good. I was looking at some of the league leaders' numbers stuff earlier today. The quarterback that has sacked the fewest in the NFL, I believe this to be true, is Trevor Lawrence. And, like, we spend a lot of time talking about greatness of players and can they make the big play and can they hit the home run. So much about football is not screwing up. So much about football is staying on schedule. So much about football is having a positive play and not a negative play. Like, Trevor Lawrence might not look great with every single pass that he throws, and he's throwing it too hard, and he has zero touch. But at the end of the day, it's an incomplete pass. And he's completing more passes than he's not. Not taking sacks, not turning the ball over. Like, you don't even need great quarterback play. If you're doing those things and eliminating the negative play, you're going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I just didn't see a lot of good quality, strong throws from him.
Ooh, he's got a cannon.
In his rookie season. I told you that. I was looking for the plays, and I saw a ton more missteps than the really, really scarce here and there throws that he made like he made at Clemson. But this season, and maybe a lot of that is, again, when we talk about it, and the best example is what the Ravens have done with Lamar Jackson, building a system that is best suited to your best player's talent and skill set. That's what they're doing in Jacksonville now. They're putting him, and they got better skill position players as well. They enhanced their running game with Etienne coming back off an injury.
Robinson was
already a guy that was there that was good. We talked about the receivers. Look, they're giving him every chance to use his skill sets to show off what he can do as relating to wins and losses too, which is big. I think that Doug Peterson is everything behind why that's going that way, along with the fact, because look, the general manager was getting, Trent Baalke was getting ripped, and it might have been the reason why they lost Peterson. But now you're going to say, is it Baalke's credit that he went and got the free agents? Is it a combination? I don't care what it was, but they got the right guys to help push Trevor Lawrence and the team at the same time in the right direction, and they're doing great things. I don't think they're the best team in the division this year, but I think they're showing you that they're a good team.
I actually think that the Jags are a good model for the Texans.
For sure.
You get the quarterback, you spend a little bit of money, you bring up the overall talent of the team, and you start to see it play out a little bit.
That's when you also adjust the assistant, the coach and the coordinator.
Potentially.
I mean, you don't touch it until you get the right guy, but once you get the right guy, it is on you to make sure you give him the right guys around him.
Jalen Hurts is an MVP candidate. Reality or overreaction?
It's reality right now.
Ooh, I'm surprised to hear you say that.
I got to be honest.
The anti-Jalen Hurts of the two of us.
I honestly may have to be the guy that eats crow and says I was wrong on Jalen Hurts as a starting quarterback in this league for an above-average team. Look, Jalen Hurts right now is proving me wrong, but we're only three games in, and we're going to see how it develops. Jalen Hurts is also the guy when the stage was the biggest, the lights were the brightest, and the playoffs were on the line that he did not perform at an even acceptable level. So there's a lot to be – but right now the two guys in my mind that are leading candidate for most valuable player are Jalen Hurts and Lamar Jackson. And Lamar Jackson has been out of this world as well. So, and he's on a prove-it deal right now playing that – because my thing is not only before were the Ravens – skeptical because they hated the Watson contract and didn't think he should be paid like that. Now they might have to pay more because he's proven right now, because we don't know what Watson's going to be when he comes back either. But right now what he's proven is he's all of Deshaun Watson and then some, with the way he makes a team better with his legs, with his decisions, with his throwing, with just the way he leads his team and some of the touch passes he's able to make too, which people, I think, lose when all they see is SportsCenter.
Yeah, he's been much better of a passer in the last 2 years than he was like in the first 2 years. I think Lamar Jackson, what he did with the contract stuff was great, and he was getting crushed over the offseason. Oh, he should have an agent. He should sign a long – why? He's going to make tons of money, bet on himself, and looks like he's going to smash anything that Deshaun Watson got. I don't think that this is an overreaction either. The Eagles are playing very good. If they win the NFC East, just by default, Jalen Hurts is going to be in the MVP conversation, regardless of how he plays. But on top of that, he's playing really well. And he also has the talent around him with A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith. I'm buying this as well. Reality, Jalen Hurts is an MVP candidate.
No question.
Overreaction or reality, Josh McDaniels should be the first head coach fired this year.
No, I was kind of thinking about the Raiders after we talked about them yesterday, going, this might be a true indication that Josh McDaniels is one of those guys that's always going to be a good coordinator but just can't figure it out as a head coach. Wade Phillips is the guy that always comes to mind, an all-world defensive coordinator, but just wasn't the right guy as a head coach. Josh McDaniels, again, and I've been critical of saying this is the year that Carr either puts up or shut up because it's all on his shoulders. He's got too much talent around him in every single way and at every single position group to where they've invested on the defense and it's particularly on the offense, and you got to prove that you can be that guy. I think it's also, as it takes you take a step back from that to say, it's also on Josh McDaniels. You're an offensive-minded head coach with every weapon in the book. You should be able to lead this team to better results than they've gotten through 3 weeks of the season. Is there plenty of season left to figure it out and work it out? Sure. But you know what? The clock is ticking, and I don't think that Mr. Davis is going to have a very long leash with a guy that he brought in to replace the guy that he really loved as an offensive-minded head coach in John Gruden.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We're going to be joined by former NFL Executive of the Year, current XFL General Manager, I believe for Dallas, Randy Mueller. Joins the Killer Bees next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Get know when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Get know when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5.